Track 11, and we have two feature articles for you this week. The first is from TNF Soundings about the prospect of loss of vision opening up a new world.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, this is Nikki, with an article written by Fiona about how different people across the world have treated a diagnosis of impending sight loss as an opportunity to open up new worlds. Our first example is Rebecca Lennox from Halewood in Merseyside, who was diagnosed with idiopathic intracranial hypertension in 2022 after experiencing blurred vision and headaches. In 2023, she was registered severely sight impaired after a phone call delivered the worst possible news. Speaking to the Liverpool Echo earlier this year, Rebecca recalled, "When I got a phone call to say I was going to be registered as blind, I just said, 'No, I'm not.' It sounds dramatic, but I thought my life was over. I thought I wouldn't be able to walk, drive, do things with my kids." Rebecca shut herself away completely for almost a year, but slowly, with the support of her family, she realised she would have to learn to navigate this new world by herself. Before her diagnosis, Rebecca was a student nurse, student midwife, and a phlebotomist. She now works as an emergency medical advisor for 999. She has helped the RNIB put together a Be Helpful guide to help sighted people know what to do if they see someone with sight loss out and about. Summing up her new world, Rebecca said, "My eyesight's getting worse, but my feelings are getting better." Meanwhile, in Nottingham, an 11-year-old schoolgirl faced with increasing blindness due to suffering Stargardt disease has created a wish list of things she would like to see before her sight deteriorates. Stargardt disease is a rare genetic eye condition where fatty material builds up on the macula, the small part of the retina needed for sharp central vision. The most common symptom of Stargardt disease is a slow loss of central vision in both eyes. The problem affects 1 in 10,000 people, according to the Macular Society. Lily Ray Merchant and her mum Emma have created a list of things they want to experience, including an African safari, because of Lily Ray's love of cats. But seeing the Northern Lights is at the top of their list, and that's likely to mean a journey to Norway. Emma set up a GoFundMe to help Lily Ray see the Northern Lights before her eye condition worsens. The pair were overwhelmed to see a £5,000 donation and a personal message from actress and Titanic star Kate Winslet that read, "Wishing Lily Ray some magical adventures so she can make many special memories to treasure. With lots of love, Kate Winslet and family." Lily Ray now uses a cane and is learning Braille. She hoped sharing her story will debunk some misconceptions about people with sight impairments. She explained, "So many people assume if you've got a cane, you're probably blind. People think I can't see them, but I can. Even if you feel like you can't do something, or you feel like you don't have any worth in life, realise that there is a purpose for your life. You've just not found it yet. Good luck, Lily Ray. You sound a remarkable young lady." And lastly, over in Canada, a Montreal couple knew they had to do something when they learned that tragically, three of their four young children would eventually go blind. Edith and Sebastian Lemay-Pelletier discovered that the three children had developed retinitis pigmentosa in the space of a few months. Edith met a specialist at their school who told her, "You could look in books at pictures of giraffes and elephants so that when they're blind, the children will have an image." But the couple hit on a much bigger idea. "Sebastian and I said, 'Let's go see the giraffes and elephants in person,'" Edith told Canadian news broadcaster CBC. Sebastian had shares at the company where he worked, and when the company was sold, he used the money to fund the trip, describing it as a gift from fate. And so the family, including Mia, 12, Leo, 10, Colin, 8, and Laurent, 6, embarked on a year-long adventure around the world, sleeping on trains, meeting child monks in Nepal, going on countless safaris across Africa and riding in a hot air balloon trip over Cappadocia in Turkey. The family visited 15 countries, including Zambia, Turkey, Indonesia, Laos, Egypt, Ecuador and Colombia, building their itinerary as the journey progressed. With Edish ensuring the children kept up with the school curriculum during their travels, they found it easy to settle in once back home. But the Lemay Pelletier family is not done sharing their adventures with the rest of the world. National Geographic is making a documentary about their journey. It is expected to air at the end of this year.
DNF Soundings.
And our second feature article is from last week's Nature Diary in the Advertiser and was written by Alice Henderson and is entitled A Creekside Wonder. Having spent many a day exploring the beaches, coves and mudflats of Frogmore Creek, I have many memories from throughout my life, both as a child and as an adult. I don't go there so often now, but when I do, I love reminiscing and remembering all the antics I used to get up to. Last week, with the brisk northeasterly wind at my back, I took a stroll along the south shore, nature gazing as I went. Handily marked by a kink in the wall and the metal mooring post my dad installed many years ago, I paused to take in the former resting place of Puffin, our family's Swallows and Amazon-style dinghy that we used to explore the creek. I remembered the antics that my brother and I would amuse ourselves with whilst Dad made the boat seaworthy. One such endeavour was trying to catch the slippery eels that hid under flat stones lying in the path spring water that bubbled up out of the adjacent field and trickled down the wall and across the shore. Every time I come, I have to check to see if they're still here. And sure enough, after lifting a couple of stones, I saw the wiggle of their silvery black bodies as they wriggled off seeking somewhere new to hide. Much like the unfathomable journeys of animals such as swallows, Arctic terns and monarch butterflies, the European eel's extraordinary migratory story is one that has stuck with me ever since I learnt about it as a small child. To think that the little slippery eels that you find in Frogmore Creek have come all the way from the Sargasso Sea near the Bahamas is incredible in itself. But knowing that it is possible for an adult eel to find its way back to where it was spawned in the Sargasso Sea, when its only previous knowledge of the journey was in the opposite direction, as a microscopic larva carried and steered by the currents that flow through the North Atlantic Ocean, and that just leaves me in awe of nature. On this blustery but warm day in September, a few things caught my eye. There were a large amount of gulls, all sat facing the wind, all in a row, one behind each other. Presumably, this helps protect the majority from the wind. And it reminded me that someone at the RSPB once told me that seagulls have 4 hours free time a day. I've no idea how this was discovered or if this is actually true, but I have to say, they do tend to do a lot of sitting around. I wandered down the creek and over the spit, a shingly promontory sticking out into the creek. This geological feature is created in an area where there is an abrupt change in direction of the shoreline. The movement of sediment by flowing waters pushes the material onwards and deposits it away from the shore, creating a new narrow bit of land. As I sat for a moment, looking over the algae-covered mudflats beyond the spit, I watched as bright yellow leaves, the first fall of the season, fluttered and tumbled over the green carpet of weed, sometimes stopping caught in a patch of seaweed before being picked up again by the wind and continuing their journey down the estuary. Making my way back, I turned my attention to that creek, lined with brave trees and bushes clinging on to the earth with their roots. Some dangle their limbs over the estuary, where low-hanging branches act as strainers on the incoming and outgoing tides. They pick up flotsam and jetsam out of the water as it flows through, leaving curtains of seaweed and other debris dangling from twigs like ornaments. I was impressed with the amount of berries I found. I had to sample the blackberries and elderberries, of course, and I even tasted the plump, juicy sloes, something I like to do for fun, even though they are sour and make your mouth go furry. Hawthorn berries, honeysuckle berries, and rose hips, all ripe and red, waiting for the birds to feast on them and take their seeds to propagate elsewhere through their droppings. The holly berries are just turning, and the tiny ivy flowers were abuzz with bees and butterflies. Along with berries, I spotted catkins on the hazel, a large acorn on the shore, and fresh-looking buds forming on the oak and the elm trees, using the last of this year's energy to prepare for the next season. This walk reminded me of how much there is still to enjoy as we leave the summer behind and make our way into autumn, with its colourful leaves, bright berries, and soon to be plentiful bounty of nuts. What a brilliant description. Thank you, Alice.